Ladies and gentlemen, this is Alonzo Bowden. I want to welcome you to episode 352 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? We are back in studio after a brief break. I was on the road a bit, and our guest today, I love this guy. I love everything about this guy. Ladies and gentlemen, from Chicago by way of LA, former talk show host, probably his least known credit, following me in the shoes of talk show hosts at KBLA in Los Angeles. Also, a producer for the Hannibal Buress show on Comedy Central, a regular contributor to and participant on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, a former NPR guy, and on and on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, comedian, commentator, and generally smart, funny guy, Brian Babylon.
Boom, boom, boom.
That's like an old school. I want to come in. A boom, 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 boom. Like blues style.
That's the Chicago
that's
in you.
That's the way that you come.
That's the Chicago in you that you got to come on to a blues riff.
Like, I've seen like a man hold a crowd's attention with a guitar and an amp on the sidewalk.
Absolutely.
That's hardcore showmanship. But you should have just said, like, the other black guy on Wait, Wait.
Yeah, I could have. I could. Well, do you know that there was a third, and he recently left? He was a substitute announcer.
Oh, yeah.
When
oh,
Bill
yeah.
couldn't make it. I forget his name. He was from the Virginia or D.C., college professor.
And I saw that, and I was like, who's that dude?
Yeah, because Peter... To the people listening, Peter Sagal is the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's a news quiz comedy show that we do on NPR.
Very and popular.
Peter was telling me about him. He said, I can't believe you've never met him. But it was one of those things. You know how that show, every week it's a different cast. So there are people on the show that you could do the show for years and never meet
and
them.
And never meet unless you know. And also, the guy's not a comic, Peter. Why?
Right.
Why would I mean, thank you for thinking I know professors like that, but.
Well, that's a funny thing about doing NPR because we joke about the nerds, but like the intellectual community gives comics a lot more credit than we deserve mm-hmm. for being on NPR. They're like, suddenly you can walk in and you are talking to professors and people at the height of academia.
Oh, yeah.
And like. You know, I tell jokes, right? Like, I make up half the stuff I talk about, you know?
This dude walked up on me. I think I was in Seattle. He walked up on me. I just did a show. He walked up on me and talking about high-level intellect. He's one of the guys who's building the Tesla robot.
Okay.
He's mm-hmm. like, oh, you're the guy who's going to end humanity. You like me? Wow, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
So I want to get into a few things in your career.
Okay.
Working with Hannibal, and I know you've known Hannibal a long time. Mm-hmm. Did you guys come up together in the comedy world? Is that
yeah.
a connection?
His mom actually reminded me how long I've known him. It's going on 17 years. And that's when he first started stand up. I first started stand up. I'm much older than him. And I was like the older guy who had a nice job and doing open mics. And he was just, I'm back from college, just doing open, you know. So,
yeah.
But how we connected was, you know, I'm from the south side of Chicago. And that's when I started comedy, when they built Joke to Notes Comedy Club across the street from my house.
Right.
And I was like, oh, damn, I guess I do got to do this for real. And Cannibal was one of the only guys that was kind of telling jokes like me. Like mm-hmm. Not like, man, my baby mama crazy. You know,
right,
baby.
He was doing, it was a more.
It was next level. You
well,
know.
It's more written, more thought out, more thought as opposed out. To off the cuff, you know, around the way comedy.
Yeah, and I mean, let me give you a quick plug. You are not even low key. You were one of the guys that made me realize like, oh, maybe there is a chance for me because I felt I don't do that Def Jam kind of comedy. I never thought that the industry comedy would accept a regular looking black guy because, man, he looked like me a little bit. And he's just telling smart jokes because he's on, you know, Last Comic Standing. Yeah. And I never forget that joke. He said, "What is female Viagra?" "Cash." I was like, "Oh damn! Oh man! No well, jokes though. No, thank seriously." You. And I realized that kind of comedy was connects me to people.
Well, I'll tell you, there's certain like for me, it was Franklin Ajayi, yep. Right? Watching him do his thing helped me do mine. But it's interesting what you said. I started in the 90s. I started when Def Jam was it. The yes. biggest thing in comedy. But I didn't come from that world. I wasn't a Def Jam comic, so I wasn't going to pretend to be. I got some support from some big-name black comics who were like, yeah, you keep doing you. Don't worry about, you know, which was great. But I never worried about the industry accepting me. It was people. Yeah. It was people because...
What kind of people?
Well, I'm going to explain. I would get in front of black crowds, and they'd be like, what? And I listen, there was a place called Manhattan Proper in my neighborhood in Queens where I grew up. Now, I was already in L.A. when I started comedy. I went back to New York to do the Apollo. I hit the stage in the Proper doing my act. They didn't just boo me off the stage. Mm. They booed me out of the club onto the sidewalk.
I see him back there. Get all the way out.
But the thing, and when I did the Apollo, it smashed. They loved it. They loved what I did. But the turnaround on the people, the support of the people, because see, the thing is, and you know this, and all black people know this, they see us as a monolith. They mm-hmm. see us as if all black people are the same. But we run the range, you know, I'm going to just use two celebrity. Let's say we go from, I don't know, from Biggie to Barack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah. And they don't realize that. And the audience is, it took some time. And one of the funny things about it was when I won Last Comic Standing, it was almost like I was so legitimized. And I hate the term, but I was so legitimized in the crossover that some of the most hardcore black fans accepted me because now they were proud of me, right?
See, I told you he was with me. Yeah. I didn't boo with Apollo. I didn't blew with that Queens Club. See, I was for him.
But that's all good. So getting back to your history and Hannibal,
yeah.
Where were you in with him? Were you his producer? Were you working with him when he dropped the Cosby joke, which was just... He didn't say it to end Cosby. He didn't create a movement. He did a joke in a set and then, you know, kind of stood on the disbelief of it and, like, Google it yourself.
He's still a disbelief of it.
Where were you with him when that happened?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was right before he did say, hey, should I do that Cosby joke? I was like, yeah, who cares? You know, it's more of like a – everybody talking about it. It's not like you are breaking news on something that already exists. Family Guy had made jokes. SNL had made jokes. Dirty Rod had made jokes about it. People were like in the undertow were making jokes about it. I feel at that time, it was just internet was just right. People's feelings were just right. And they really couldn't go after Cosby itself. So they used this as the vehicle for the jump off. And once it started, he was just sort of like, the go-to, it was this guy. No, he wasn't doing any detective work.
Right.
He wasn't, like, uncovering no sleuth. He was just toying around with a bit. And that is, you know, you also have to think about people's cell phones and how a cell phone footage can spark something.
Right. Now, if anything you say, somebody's recording it.
Somebody's recording it.
So after that, he gets the show on Comedy Central.
Yeah. And I was in Chicago.
Sometime after, but yeah.
Yeah. For me, that whole time was kind of fun for me because the New York Comedy Festival happened, and I was like, hey, I didn't get to get on it, but I was like, hey, could I come hang out with you? He's like, yeah, my fact, open for me, you know. Sold out at the Union Hall Theater, whatever that is, in New York. It was huge. I was like, this is great. I got a dressing room for the first time. I'm like, what is going on? Like a little fruit basket. My name on it. What? Smash the show. You know, things are like, then I got stuff on Comedy Central, like, what was that? The South Beach Comedy Festival. Yeah, mm-hmm. So things started rolling for me. And I realized at that time I had to leave Chicago.
Right. Now, were you working in Chicago radio at that time?
Yeah.
You were working your day job.
My day job was a morning radio. I ran my own morning radio show at WBZ on their younger, browner station called Vocalo, which I actually helped start that station.
Uh-huh.
And that, I think that kind of was fun for me, but also detrimental to my career because I was giving that company all my sweet black talent. For nothing. Not for nothing, but because it still exists. But I should have went to New York. But I didn't. I stayed there.
And you know, I look at some things like that, some decisions like that. But then in the long view, when I look back in the long lens, I heard this guy say something. He said, I look forward and I learn backward.
Yeah.
Meaning I look back and see, oh, this is what I learned. This is what I – and gigs like that, I find that's part of the education. Like, you don't realize it when you're doing it, when you're working for no money or short money or whatever. And then you look back and say, oh, that's when I learned to do this that I'm getting paid to do now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it was – and then, at that point when he got the show Why on Comedy Central, I was like, I got to go. So I hit him up. He said, yeah. And a lot of people back in Chicago said, man, Hannibal gave Babylon a job. And Hannibal responded, hey, I did not give Babylon nothing. He had to interview in front of multiple white people to get this job. He had to convince multiple white people that he knew he was doing. Mm. So I became the social media producer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a weird show. We joke about it now. The show was just weird, not, what he really wanted. It was just fun to do. It was on the Paramount lot. I had an office at the Paramount lot. I'm like, whoa. And then the show only got canceled, of course, because it wasn't that popping. And then I realized, like, oh, shit. Shows do get canceled in Hollywood. It doesn't last forever. I left home for this.
Wait, this ain't The Simpsons? I'm not going to get a 28-year run?
Yeah, I'm on a show. I'm here forever. I'm getting paid. So, it ran. It was a cool summer. It was what? It was really just 2 months and 2 weeks maybe. And I just got back in L.A. I was living at the Laugh Factory Apartments.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Jamie hooked me up with that because I met Jamie through the Laugh Factory in Chicago.
Right.
So when he opened that club, I was pretty much his go-to guy, like, hey, Bob Saget's not going to show up. Can he do an hour? Mm-hmm. And he had just met me, so I would kind of be that, go-to guy. So he looked out for me when I came to L.A., and during that time, I had a baby out of nowhere, and I was trying to – life was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I was in that apartment at the Laugh Factory apartment. Didn't have any windows in that apartment across the street. That little weird house is across the street.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah.
Had no windows. Johnny Sanchez lives next door. The Bill Dawes is around there. Mm-hmm. And no window. And I realized, like, oh, shit, I think I'm depressed. I think I have a baby on the way. You wake up in L.A. and it's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
You wake up, it's 70 degrees. You walk to that coffee bean down there, see Chris D'Elia in there for no reason. And this was every morning I wake up, see Chris D'Elia just sitting there reading a book sometime, not remembering, hey, Chris, go back home, smoke some weed, watch some Family Guy, take a nap, wake up, do a set. It was driving me nuts, and I had to bounce. So I moved to San Francisco and just came back here just to – when I had to work on stuff, and I'm back in action now. Came back to work at KBLA with Tavis. And that could be a clean transition into that mess. And I don't You set it up.
So, and my long-term listeners and fans, I appreciate you. You know what I'm talking about. KBLA was a talk radio station, progressive talk radio station started by Tavis Smiley. I was hired to do Afternoon Drive. I did it for about 3 months. It was too much of a job. It got in the way of me doing stand-up, which is my love and my creativity. I didn't get the support that I needed. Like, I had to produce, write, and look up the stories and book the interviews, do everything for the show. And financially, it didn't make any sense, so it wasn't growing. So I left. And then shortly after, was it right before I left or shortly after? Sometime I was informed that you were coming. They said, yeah, we got a guy named Brian Babylon. Do you know him? And I was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, good dude. Like, we worked together on Wait, Wait, and I know he's coming from NPR. And I was like, because to me, what I learned was radio is not my gig. That's what I learned. But I said, but he's a radio guy, so it should be cool. So that's now you come in, and what happens?
It was a disaster. And I'm this is my first time really talking. I said a few things on stage, but I now have the honor and pleasure of saying Tavis Smiley fired me, which is a punchline within itself. Okay? I was like, how the hell can a nigga who canceled cancel me? Boy, you canceled. So he hit me up, and I was with you. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, you know what? I started a radio station that is still going on currently. I was the first guy that Tori Malatia, who actually is one of the guys who helped start Wait.
Yeah.
You know, This American Life. He started this new radio station. I was the first guy he hired to help him build this new radio station. I was like, well, you know what? I actually started one, so it shouldn't be that hard. The money you are giving me is money I will blow in an evening in Berlin.
Or, and you know, just know that that was more money than I was getting. You had a better deal.
Well, that's crazy. and that's nuts. And that's nuts. So, the first of all, I'll just say this. A recipe for disaster is when people put too much on a delusional narcissist. Tavis Smiley sure was hot 20 years ago when BET or PBS, you know, he was kind of the black Charlie Rose. That was decent. He had some Me Too issues. And I told him, like, dog, you so irrelevant, your Me Too didn't even stick. People, you know what I'm saying? Like, where you can come back. Ask me how many meetings we had for my show to work. Hey, so how do you want to do this? Zero.
Yeah, it was do your own thing. Now, I will say this about Tavis. And in regard to what you're saying, and I think this was one of the problems we had with the station, Tavis came from a time when talk radio was huge. So in the 80s, you know, one of the jokes I did about the show was like, I got a job that would have been a great job in 1987.
Amazing.
Right. And that's when Tavis was big. So you have that experience and mentality, but now we're in a social media download podcast world.
On demand.
Perfect. On demand world. And talk radio does not have the impact that it had unless you're already a I hate to say it, but it's all the right wing guys, a Rush Limbaugh, a Sean Hannity, or one of these crazy right wingers. Larry Elder. I mean, I spent the whole summer explaining that Larry Elder can't be governor because he's a radio talk show host and I'm a radio talk show host. Like, that does not qualify you
for governor. And it's just sort of, you don't have your 80s radio mentality. It's a horrible version of Back to the Future, sort of reverse. And he didn't even have RSS feeds for podcasts. I'm talking about basic podcast 101. So I'm telling you, it was good for me because I realized, like, dude, what? And Hannibal said, he's like, Babylon, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, dog, that sounds stupid. Like, AM radio, who's, I was like, I know, dog. And I realized Tavis Smiley caught me when I was in a mode of, you know what? I want to give back. Let me help this brother start this. Maybe he can't. No. 0%. And that's the last thing I'm going to say on it. And the next time you'll hear something of me talk about this, I'm doing a diss rap.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the only way for me to really express myself, it's not about getting fired. It's like, you called me to stop what I was doing, to come back here in L.A. permanently to do this for you, and you couldn't even call me? He didn't even call me, y'all, to tell me not to come back.
That's Hollywood.
And you are not Hollywood, Tavis Smiley. You are a has-been media personality that needs to get your act together.
Hollywood never says no. Hollywood never says you're fired. They just don't call back. Or like you said, you literally see somebody. When Last Comic Standing got canceled, the way we found out was another show in our time slot. And we were like, well, that's not good.
And that's exactly what happened to me. They start promoting another show in my time slot. I was like, oh, I just was in there. You told me everything was cool. Like, just tell me, dog. You're not paying me millions of nothing. You're paying me whatever.
Okay, I want to jump forward now.
As we move forward.
Stop it. It's my show. All right? Behave yourself.
my God. Okay.
To current events, and this is what I love about having you here, by the way. I love talking about current events on the podcast. Sometimes we get caught up in interviews, which are great, and people love them. But with you, I know I can talk about anything. So we're going to talk about the big things going on now. We were joking about this, but it's true. The slap heard around the world slapped the Ukraine war right out of the news, slapped gas prices off of the front page.
Be real. It's tough on that.
Anything. So... What do you think now? It's been, 10 days, I guess, since it happened. What I will tell you real quick, my first take was wrong, because my first take was there had to be something else going on. Like, this couldn't be what I saw. There had to be something. You know, they're both A-list celebrities, black celebrities. Maybe they don't like each other. They met at a party, or they had beef, something else.
Like some Andy Kaufman.
Right. Something going on that we don't know about. And then... it was like, no, it was joke, slap. There was nothing, no reason, nothing behind it. Will Smith lost his mind, whether it's permanently or in the moment. Chris couldn't have handled it better as a comedian. He did the thing all comics do, try to change the energy with a joke. That didn't work. He left the stage. He didn't say anything to anybody. He's still holding his tongue, and I say, yeah, but when he has something to say, it's going to be brilliant. And it's, you know, that's just my opinion. So yeah. What's yours?
I was acting in San Fran and kind of saw it on social media, then looked it up, and then I told the crowd what happened. I said, if I see anybody pick up their phone to Google this, you don't get smacked. So don't do that, you know. for me, and I said this on this other news show, I was like, What I didn't like is how all of a sudden comics start getting personal. Like, this was an attack on comedy. This is not an attack on comedy. The Oscars ain't a comedy club. You know, what's more annoying than a Will Smith is a bachelorette party gone wrong
right.
at a comedy club. That's disruptive than any slap, you know. I can't go into the nuances of what was in Will's mind. Because I find that a lot of times certain black guys just go crazy in L.A., in Hollywood. Martin Lawrence, Terry Crews, for some X-Files, something behind, they got some ray that makes black guys go crazy. I feel if he didn't start cursing in the audience, it wouldn't have been as bad.
We wouldn't have known it was real. That was when... Yeah. When he started yelling from the audience is when I was like, yeah, this ain't a setup. This ain't a bit. This is real.
It's real.
When he walked on stage and the initial slap, I think everybody was like, was that meant to be like, is this some joke? Something that we don't know? You know, so we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
But the capitalist in me will tell you this. Chris Rock's the winner. His tickets went from $40
yep.
to $800.
Yeah, they said his ticket prices went up 25 times that night. And his tour is completely sold out.
Somebody can slap me.
I wonder what Kevin Hart's going to do.
What do you mean?
They're supposed to go on tour together this summer.
Oh.
They have a big thing together. And it's been interesting to me, excuse me. A-list black comics haven't spoken out. Kevin Hart, Jamie Foxx, even Mike Epps, people that are in both of those worlds, right? They're superstar comics. They're superstar actors.
Yeah.
So they know both of them. Anthony Anderson, who's not even a stand-up, but still everyone knows Anthony in comedy world, blah, blah, blah. None of them have spoken up, and it's got to be weird for them.
I'm going to tell you why.
Because I don't – they can't take a side.
For me, I think that they feel like – how I feel like that's something between them two dudes – it just was in a very public setting.
Right.
If this was at like some rando bar.
Yeah. Then it would just be they just, had a fight.
Man, they had a little thing and we all hanging out playing poker the next week.
Yeah.
The fact that it was the Oscars makes it a trillion times more sensational. People just throwing things out there. That's why they can't even get in the mix, because it's like, let this pass.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no good thing for them to say. So I think they're all, whether, you know, on their own or under the advice of others, like, just let this one go.
Let this one ride.
I liked what Kareem had to say. Kareem wrote a great piece on it. If you haven't read it, I'm talking to my fans. If you haven't read it, look it up. Kareem talked about a lot of the issues involved. I also liked something that Eric Griffin said. Eric Griffin's a buddy of mine. Great comic, by the way. You know Eric.
Yeah.
He said they need to stop inviting comics to the Oscars because they don't like jokes. You know, actors take themselves very seriously. And they don't like when we make fun of acting or make fun of the fact they do take themselves so seriously. I was talking with Dom Herrera. We were talking, can you imagine going to the Laugh Factory and saying you're an artist? Now, people are generous and they call us artists, and we might be, I don't know, but if one of us said, you know, yeah. I'm an artist.
No, I'm an artist, but if it's on the comedy tip, it's like, come on, dude, I do this.
We would destroy you if you came into a bunch of comics and started talking about yourself as an artist.
Yeah, I'm an artist. Boy, if you don't get off the stage with that goofy mess.
We would give you some paint and say, get busy. What, you an artist? Do my headshot.
Hey, Basquiat, get over here. Hey, Basquiat, bring me some more drinks.
All right. Next topic.
Boom.
Next topic. Ketanji Brown Jackson. At this point, I think we know she's going to be confirmed to the Supreme Court because the Republicans are so mad. Like that, to me, there's no better proof she's made it than the anger, the ridiculous anger that they have.
Can I? And this is a podcast where I'm allowed to push back.
So go ahead.
I think the media powers that be keep up this anger between the sides to sell commercial breaks. I think if you ask your average, like when you do shows, Middle America, right, where you have hundreds of people there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask those people who live in the reddest of red states, how you feeling that? Oh, what? I think your average person is going to be like, whatever. But for some reason, the media always tries to put Ted Cruz's energy or Josh Hawley. Like those two clown towns speak for everybody.
And this is what I'll say to that. First of all, you're right about comedy shows, but here's the thing. Extreme right-wingers don't come to comedy shows.
No, I understand that.
Particularly not ours. Now, here's the thing about the Marsha, what's it, Blackburn or whatever her name is, from Tennessee, or Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz. They're not appealing to the middle of America.
No.
They are talking to their base. It, by any measure, poll, whatever, two-thirds of the American people support her to be a Supreme Court justice. They're like, are you kidding? She is so qualified. This is the woman we want on the Supreme Court. You're absolutely right. People want her. But the problem is, and you know this, nobody listens to that voice.
Because that voice doesn't sell papers.
Right. So we have this extreme right-wing hatred toward this woman. But I'm asking you, I'm not talking about that. I'm asking you how you feel about it.
No, and I say, for me, I feel like the other two-thirds. Let's take, okay, good. It's better than the other black person that was picked on there. I didn't even know she did a play with Mo Rocca. Did you know that?
Yeah, she, I actually, full disclosure, have a friend, a woman who I used to date, who went to school with her.
Nice.
Went to Harvard with her.
You date Harvard?
Well, that was, I told her that's why we had no business dating each other. Because I said, now look at who your friends are. Let me introduce you to some of mine. So this is part of the reason you did well. No, but she said they went to school. She said they knew each other in the sense that there's a limited black community at Harvard, so they all know each other, just like you and me with NPR.
That's that dude.
Although they weren't mistaken for each other, which you and me have been.
All the time.
You know, you had to grow your hair back. I think that's when you let your hair grow out, I should
say.
But that's when we separated.
Yeah. I told people, I had to go get this whole man weave so people can stop confusing Alonzo with me. But no, you feel what I'm saying. Like
No, absolutely. It shouldn't be an issue. And you know what else? This bothers me. That it's an issue, and I'm happy about it, but it bothers me that it's an issue, the fact that she's a black woman. Now, I'm very happy to see a black woman go on the Supreme Court because I am a believer that, and listen, I've said this from the beginning, I want the Senate to be 50-50. I want Kamala Harris, I want a black woman to make the deciding vote to put a black woman on the Supreme Court.
Optically.
for every young black girl in the world to see.
Yeah.
To see I can do that. That to me, that is a message, and it is seen. It you know, but in a perfect world, her being a black woman wouldn't be an issue. We'd look at her, you know, legal and judicial background and be like, wow, we're lucky to, she's taking this job.
Because
she could go to the private sector and make $6 million a year, you know. So.
Let me ask you a question. My only thing was, in the beginning, when it all started, I felt Joe Biden, and he was playing into that media, you know, circle jerk that just wants to push certain sensational things. I felt by him saying, I'm going to nominate a black woman. I felt he should say, I'm trying to nominate a black person. Left it at that, and then nominate this woman. And I get that was just a dog whistle.
Right.
I think when you do stuff like that, you give, I call it the Jesse Smollett effect,
mm-hmm.
where don't give these other people excuses to just, you know, harp on something that is irrelevant.
Right.
That's going to make them hate it more and just push back more when there's no need for it.
He should have said, I have a Supreme Court nominee. This is who she is. And then if they want to make an issue of her
there you go.
Gender or race, it's on them.
There you go.
Just nominate her as the most experienced, you know.
Show me another person
judge.
Who has these credentials that should right. beat this person. And if you looked at the pie chart of all the things she's done versus all the other judges who got like that last one,
yeah.
she was just a walking cross guard judge. It was
right.
She
had never worked
Wapner.
In a trial. She wasn't even that good. She wasn't as qualified as Judge Judy because Amy Cohen or whatever her name is, I call her the handmaid because she was a handmaid in college. Like literally, she was she was in a religious cult where the women were called handmaidens. Like she did that, you know.
Hold on, you can tell by the way she smiles. Anytime they smile,
it's crazy.
Wow.
But Judge Jackson has more time in court as a judge than four of the sitting justices. Combined.
See?
So that's the, yeah, and the other thing is, and this is also part of being a black woman or a black person in this position, her hit record is spotless because it has to be. She can't yell, I like beer to the Senate. Mind you, you can't yell, I like beer at a Burger King interview.
Yeah.
All right, your interview's over. There's no job interview you can yell, I like beer, and they're like, all right, we'll hire you.
You might have a drinking problem, but you know we'll take that chance. You know, you might be a lush, but whatever.
Yeah, but it's only the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
so we good.
and that's my thing where I feel like if Biden hadn't like really made this about race, we wouldn't be having all, and that just what fuels people like to push those buttons.
You're right. It's the dog whistle. He was trying to. I'm going to use the word anchor, enhance himself to the black community and the Democratic Party to the black community with an eye on the midterms coming up. The Democrats are going to be in real trouble in the midterms, and that's something we'll talk about on another show.
Yeah, and if the Democrats want to holler at me, I can tell you how to connect.
Yeah, that's another thing. So, and you talked about this. You talked about optics.
All right.
Perfect setup. For the next story, because this bomb just dropped today. There's been a lot of rumor, a lot of talk about this and that. But so it seems Black Lives Matter paid cash for a $6 million house. Now, mind you, I will tell you this, listeners. Here in L.A., a $6 million house isn't what you're thinking.
No.
You're thinking it is a 200-room mansion. No, it's a nice house.
You're thinking
it's
a state. You're thinking, that's most people they did in Dynasty.
Yeah.
No.
No, it's an above-average house in a really nice canyon. That's what it is. But they paid cash for this house.
That's what dope dealers do.
Nah.
like a snowfall.
No, non-profits do that.
Yeah.
Non-profits do that. Because non-profit, just like in Snowfall, it's a good way to hide money.
Very
to go through the non-profit and buy real estate is a good way to hide money. So they all do that. They are claiming, now Black Lives Matter is claiming that this house is called The Campus and that it was to be used for press releases and different activities related to Black Lives Matter, which may or may not be true. And then, now I'm going from the article into my opinion. And then I want your opinion, of course. That may or may not be true. But if that is 100% true why did you hide the transaction? Now, I had somebody say to me, a friend who is a black woman in real estate and business, and she said, well, you know, if a white organization did this, it wouldn't be a story. It's like, well, maybe, maybe it wouldn't be, but when you claim to be a charity organization, activist organization, when you talk about you're here to protect people who are hurt by the police and need assistance, and you're supporting defund the police. In other words, with everything you're talking about, this doesn't look good. And the people who donated money to you probably didn't donate it to buy this house. So the fact that you keep it secret, and again, when you talk about the optics, and you know, now you're Tucker Carlson's and your Fox News people and your any right wingers, any police organizations, any of those, they have this is fuel for them.
Because now in those circles, BLM, as they call it, is a bad thing.
They call it a terrorist organization.
It's like PLO, BLM, you know, Hamas. Those are all things that's sort of like American Hamas. So I feel they were wrong because you should have just bought a strip mall and use it. If people are coming there for press releases, you could jazz up a donut shop that closed down that's in the neighborhood. There's to have it in that type of neighborhood. It's like, come on, yo. And you keep it quiet? Come on, yo. And for what you stand for, this is not just some one person. It's the, you know, the Keisha Foundation.
Right.
Where I'm just one person. You are speaking for the black diaspora in America. So you got to keep it, like you said, with the Supreme Court justice, you got to keep it spotless.
Because you know you're being watched.
You know you're being watched. You know that there's internet trolls who are ready just to pounce on that. That's how I live my life. I know what I put out there. I know what I do because you know anybody can take something and spin it any kind of way. And the fact that they had the gall and the – it's almost arrogant to do that lets me know that BLM isn't – I'm not saying it was supposed to be, because if you go through San Francisco and you see like my friend's next door neighbor in San Francisco, in Bernal Heights, and she had this Black Lives Matter on her window, and it faces kind of the expressway, but the expressway, no joke, is a quarter a mile away. She's like, "Do you think people can see this off the expressway?" I'm like, "You're crazy," because Black Lives Matter now is just sort of like a logo, a brand.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm going to speak to a couple of things. One, I want everyone to understand that this is separate from when they talked about Patrice Cullors bought these houses, and she was one of the founders of BLM, and she had to step down.
Yeah.
But when she bought her houses, that was with her own money. People just don't understand. And again, they were like, oh my God, she bought a $1 million house in Topanga Canyon. That's a 2-bedroom house in Topanga Canyon. That's not, you know, people do not understand California real estate and the prices in relation to the rest of the country. I have a friend who bought a house for under $200,000. And I was like, oh, that's the down payment on a house. You don't buy the whole house.
But in the real world, you
can buy the whole house with that. But anyway, this isn't that story. This is a different story. Now, as far as Black Lives Matter, the movement versus this, versus the leadership, this reminds me of churches, right? Mm-mm. Where Christian people can be very charitable, generous, helpful, everything that the Bible talks about, that Jesus talks about, they are that. But the business of Christianity, those leaders who are, I need a private jet. You know, Jesus told me I need a private jet to travel around in, and I need, you know, millions of dollars. And that's a different thing. And I think this is the same thing. The people in Black Lives Matter, the people who were marching, the people who protest, they truly care. And they're truly like, we want them to see our numbers. We want the police to change. And this is an example, one more time, where now the leadership has betrayed the membership.
Definitely. Because, Alonzo, if I was in charge of Black Lives Matter, they wouldn't be doing that many marches. They wouldn't be doing just hashtags and Facebook posts. It will be very targeted to what you want to accomplish. If you have time on your podcast, I'll let you know my manifesto, okay? It goes like this. Because I was in Seattle during the quarantine for like a month and a half, 2 months. And I was playing PlayStation, playing 2K, and I would just hear like a whole bunch of ruckus outside, like, ah, crowd. And I would go out there, and I would hear, if your black friend is under attack, what do you do? Stand up, fight back. It was about 500 white people in Seattle marching with like three black people. So it's not about race with this, okay? Number one is you have to, the same energy you focused on the Supreme Court justices, you focus on your local judges when it's time for election, because the local judges affect how the police act.
Right, and nobody knows those on the ballot.
No one knows. They don't even. If you spend all that hashtagging social media energy on exposing who's on the ballot in certain areas, that's easy. Number two, when you say defund the police.
Terrible slogan.
Terrible slogan. Because people like me who live in the South Side, are you kidding me? My window just got shot and defended nothing. You know, I want them to show up when I call them. You have to do it. I've never heard. I'm not saying I'm a genius, but fine, I'll say it on your podcast. I've never heard any liberal person on MSNBC or CNN, Don Lemon, nobody say, you have to focus on the police budget. What's going on is, it's too much money focusing on policing the people versus policing organized crime. And then if you look at that new Law & Order show that Stabler's on.
Yeah.
Okay? That unit, pay them more.
Well, I'm going to say this when it comes to rebudgeting the police. And there's been so many better slogans, repurpose the police, or this or that, anything better. But they talk about take the money out of buying tanks.
Yep.
Literally, buying tanks. And all this crazy weaponry, and put more money into, there should be a mental health unit so that when somebody is standing in the middle of the street yelling and they may or may not have a knife, rather than go shoot them 27 times, somebody from a mental health unit goes with a armed backup for safety, but goes and says, okay, let me try to talk this person down.
They got that in Sweden, in Berlin.
And they're doing it some here, but we need to do it more. That money needs to be spent. And the other thing is, you know, going after, and this is where you talk about the judges and the local prosecutors, et cetera, going after the bad cops. You know, there has to be some penalty. One of the problems with police that I've seen is there isn't a penalty for bad behavior.
No.
And there needs to be. And I've said this numerous times, and we're getting a little off topic here, but I said this numerous times. If the money to pay these settlements came out of the police pension fund rather than the city general fund, then the good cops would be a lot quicker to say, yo, man, get rid of this guy.
Now, you know what? Now your genius is coming out, and I love it. I've never thought about it that way, because when you hit the good guys in their pocket, you're right. Now, my solution was you have to now take on some vigilante justices for bad cops. If I see you a cop, and there needs to be a bat band for that dude who comes in, goes after that dude, his family, and then where cops are fearful of doing things that I don't want Batman to come get me.
Right. And the problem with that is, and this is the same thing with these crazy right-wingers that talk about taking on the U.S. military, they have unlimited resources. You can't battle the police because they have the resources to kill you. No matter how many guns you think you have, they have more.
They have more.
And they have tanks. And they have all kind of, you know, so.
National Guards.
Right. It's you can't win that fight. Now, getting back to Black Lives Matter and this purchase, you said another thing that I agree with. Buy a place, but buy an office. Like if you're in L.A., buy an office building around Leimert Park or Inglewood and rehab it and make it
community center.
Make it a community center and a place that people can go to. You know, child services or whatever. Like there's other ways you could spend this $6 million. And or, you know what? Buy a $2 million house and a $4 million building. You could get a nice enough place to hold your business in for $2 million.
There's a lot of non-residential strip malls. There's a lot of just places that aren't a house in a nice neighborhood. That is just dumb management.
Right.
And you just can't, you, that's what I'm saying. People, you can't, you know, that's like, no, you have to call it out what it is, because they represent me. They represent you. They represent my daughter. They represent, you know, any family you have. If these people are being bogus, You got to call them out on that.
Well, it so hurts the movement because, again, and it's like I say, this is like churches, you know, where you have people, members of the church who want to do good, who do good and this and that, and then leadership of the church that is awful and in it for the profit and tax-free. You have members of Black Lives Matter who care and are working and are trying to come up with some solution for bad policing and you know, take away the fear of black people have of the police and the streets and so on. And now we see you have the leadership that is just and you can't do it secretly. Because once you do it secretly, you can't tell me that it's okay. No. Then why was it a secret?
You have you to put it super transparent.
It has to be transparent. I say, hey, we need a house that looks good for the public, for press, or whatever reason you have for need. Now, I'm not going to argue the reason. I'm going to say
That was a dumb reason, dog.
No, but this is what they're saying. This is one of their reasons for this house.
And that's ridiculous.
This is one of their reasons. No, I'm saying if these are the reasons you have for this house, then buy a $2 million house in a nice neighborhood versus a $6 million house in an exclusive neighborhood and use that other $4 million to buy, like you said, the building in the strip mall or office building or somewhere useful to the people.
Let's just ask the real question. Why does an organization need a house?
Well, again, they're calling it the campus. Let me see if
it's... I'm saying, what can...
Okay, let me...
You know what I mean? What's the parking... No. What's the parking situation of this street? That, you know what I'm saying? How many cars will they let? I mean, is there parking there? If you want to make it a community place to save black lives, how is this house in this fancy neighborhood? You have to think, if Judge Mathis heard that, he would let that slide.
So here we go. So the questions are asking, was a campus meant to be a, quote, influencer house? A safe house for threatened or unsafe BLM activists? So BLM explained that the campus was meant to be a space to, quote, provide recording resources and dedicated space for black creatives to launch content online and in real life. So what is it, a studio? I don't know.
That sounds crazy. Yeah, that sounds crazy.
You know,
most fancy influencers, they rent these fancy houses and they're out.
They're talking about there's a YouTube show and this and that. They obviously they need to spend some of that $6 million on public relations.
Yes.
Because these are the worst excuses, you know, and they're talking about in this article, and there's a number of articles about it. This one, they're talking about eroding confidence in the movement for black lives, create disillusionment amongst past and future donors, of course. Provide fodder for right-wing talking heads to disparage the organization. Absolutely. That's what we're talking about now. And it will likely frustrate BLM's many local autonomous chapters. Remember, BLM, obviously the big press is L.A., D.C., this and that. But there are BLM movements everywhere. And the smaller movements in the smaller cities, this crushes them. Because they don't have the resources to fight this.
See, now you got me going down a rabbit hole of how did this money get from the national? Is it just L.A. Black Lives Matter?
No, this is money from the national. So why isn't there
a house in Minnesota where George Floyd died?
That's
crazy.
These are what you're saying.
Out of all the cities, you're going to go to the fancy neighborhood of L.A.?
Well, again, the press thing of blah, blah, blah. But let me see, because there was something in here, and I'm sorry, because this happened like today. These articles came out, so I have to find where they so the property was purchased by Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. Okay, that's what it's called. And the Global Network Foundation received an infusion of $66.5 million from its fiscal sponsor, who is distributing donations made by thousands, if not millions, of people. So that's what it is. So you donate the money. The money goes into this Global Network Foundation, and then the Global Network Foundation distributes this money. Okay. So that's
And this is for America.
Yeah. Well, it may even be global. I don't know. It may actually be global because remember the Black Lives Matter movement was international. Yeah. It was international. So I don't know. But I don't know. That's just what they call it. So apparently this organization collected $66 million and the L.A. organization got $6 million to buy this house cash. And it's just like we talked about. It looks bad. Now, there may be, you know, is there some nefarious intent? Is there something going on?
I don't think it was shady.
It doesn't matter because it's how it looks.
Yeah.
It's you can tell me all day, listen, we have a legitimate reason for this house. We have legitimate purpose. Okay, but then why did you do it in secret? That's where they screwed up. It can be totally legit, but the fact that you did it in secret, you're not going to be able to...
I don't care what it is.
Talk your way out of that.
It's bad management.
It is. It's bad public relations. And even now, like I have a Black Lives Matter joke that I do. So now when I say that in the crowd, now the whole crowd can give me the side eye like, yo, man, what's up with your little joke?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, I didn't know.
I heard your podcast, so you know what they was doing with that six milli.
Man, I am so tired of the news destroying good bits.
Oh, yeah.
The news destroys more good bits because as a comic, I say this all the time, it is impossible for me to write something more ridiculous than what really, like, you can't parody reality anymore.
No, but the thing is with those kind of stories, I think... a lot of people don't take in as much news kind of content as we do.
Right.
So when they hear that, they're like, what? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when they find out that it's real, you almost become, I appreciate that he put me onto that ridiculous shit because I
Well, yeah,
not
now
know.
I have to back up the original joke with this, you know, with this, right?
That, yeah.
You know, I'm going to, don't worry, I got to write. Because now I have to counter my own joke.
Yeah, or you add some crazy tag to it that is just ridiculous.
No, you can't because whatever ridiculous thing you add to it is going to actually happen. And I'm going to tell you, this just happened, okay? I had a whole bit about being a black man in a mask in a bank.
Yeah, boom.
Yeah. And what happened? A black man went to the bank with a mask.
Wakanda dude.
The director
of Black Panther.
Yeah, the director of Black Panther goes to the bank with a mask in Atlanta, in the one city where you should be allowed to be black and rich.
Can I tell you something about a bank in Atlanta? Yeah, I went to college in Atlanta. I went to Clark Atlanta University, right? And I hadn't been back in a while. And I forgot how black Atlanta is. Like, it's like... like black on black on black. You know, when I go to Chicago, it's like a few black people, mm-hmm. whatever. It was so black where they were playing like club music, like TLC, like black people music in the bank loudly. Yeah. It wasn't at like, you know, background music. It was loud at the Bank of America in Atlanta.
All right, man, we have to wrap up. So the last thing I ask every guest for.
Oh, yes.
The good news.
The good news.
We always have tons of bad coming at us. We didn't even get into, like I say, the war, global warming, right wing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. There's a million bad things going on. Brian Babylon, what is the good news?
The good news is this. I'm in a self-contained production mindset where I'm like, hey, things aren't like they used to be 10, 20 years ago. We had to get a production company, blah, blah, blah. People are cranking out stuff on phones now, making flicks. So I'm in a full-blown production mode. That's what I went to college for. I know how to do it. And I got cameras, you know, a few lights. But a week and a half ago, my homegirl texted me and said, yo, this lighting kit just fell off this van and drove away. I'm like, what? I said, yeah. She sent me a picture of it. Oh, that looks kind of cool. Just hold on to it. You know, I'm checking. So I went to the bay. And when I saw the light kit, it's like $2,000 worth of lights. You know what I'm saying? Like a hook, like a, mm-hmm. thanks, God. Remember how, you know, the porno or lady mm-hmm. would jump out the sky in a boy's room? Like a come up on top of a come up that I needed was those lights that my, and she said it to me kind of like a mob person. Yeah, they just fell off a truck, you see. It's like, did they fall off a truck? She said it. Dran drove by.
Yeah, see, the truck was driving by. See?
Yeah.
It like, hit a bump. Yeah.
Hit a bump. Yeah. Hey, I found these for you. So yeah, this free from Jesus off a truck van lighter kit is my positive news because I'm going to make that work.
We are looking forward to the content.
Thank you, bro.
Where do people find the content you're doing now?
Right now, you can find me on Instagram at Brian Babylon. I can't get back into my Twitter account for some strange reason, but that's where I make a lot of beats too.
You and Cawthorn are both
who
banned from me. He was the guy who did the whole transgender thing. He won't identify transgender people by their chosen name. He uses their original name, and they banned him from Twitter for it.
Wow,
whole different story.
Real quick nugget about that. You know, heard about Bumble, the dating app,
yeah,
where women get to message guys
right
first. I was in the Bay last week. I found out a loophole guys are doing is labeling themselves as they or them, non-man, so they can message people first.
Yeah, don't do that.
I'm not. I'm just like, wow, you guys.
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm just talking about to any men. Like, you know, I know I learn a lot of women, and I have a lot of women friends, and I have a whole thing about the word creepy.
They don't want that.
It's comical to the extent that men do creepy stuff where women are like, they just can't get a break. So now they come up with a whole thing called Bumble that allows them to choose and them to reach out. And the creepy guys are like, oh, we done found a loophole. Now I can creep on you.
Got me a hack.
Leave them alone.
Got me a hack, yo. Yeah, I'm on. I put all my music. I do like at least 3 or 4 beats a week. That's my little zen thing when I make music. And I put those on Instagram. Going back to Chicago, do some shows. I'm going to hit Mike up to be on Wait Wait again. We got to find a way to get another all-black panel. We did that. They did that once, you and Phoebe.
Might not have been that great because we did it once.
Yeah. No, we're going to do it again, man. But, hey, man, thank you
man,
so much.
Thank you for being here. I'm glad this worked out with travel and scheduling and everything else, man. I got nothing but love for you and the work you do. And just look at that. He's doing the picture I'm supposed to do of the two of us and post it on the gram. So look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do something I never remember to do.
What's that?
Take a picture with my guests for my Instagram.
Oh, so man.
There we go.
I'm on the Zogram.
There we go. Looking
on
all
the Zogram.
Professional.
On the Zogram.
All right.
Thank
Brian
you, man.
Babylon. Thank you, brother.
My dog. Thank you, big bro.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Kyle Kinane. Me and my broad-shouldered buddy, Shane Torres, want you to know we have a new podcast called No Accounting for Taste.
This podcast celebrates things that people tend to shit on for no reason, like MMA, competitive eating, and hair plugs. Kyle?
Give us a call at 971-259-8302 and tell us why you think all you could eat buffets are a godsend and not to be judged.
I shut down a Golden Corral once. I'll say this, my biscuit wasn't the only thing that was smothered and covered. We'll see you on the pod.
The first episode drops April 11th only on All Things Comedy.